Let's go ahead and, now that it's the top of the hour, talk about a couple other candidates. Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson, with whom I agree, I think, on the most actual policy positions of any candidate out there, which is not surprising. He, you know, considers himself a libertarian of sorts. He's conservative on economic issues, if you would call conservative being in favor of the free market, and he's liberal on social issues. He's the only candidate out there that has affirmed the status as being liberal on social issues. Other candidates, maybe they don't emphasize them. I didn't see any emphasis on social issues with respect to Romney, but that's a whole other thing we could talk about because he's Mormon, right? I know people who are supporting Romney simply because he's Mormon. Johnson, liberal on social issues. I have had qualms about his foreign policy, and it was because he has in his mind this idea that he's not going to do anything unless he sees somebody as a military threat, and he doesn't see Iran and some, you know, other countries that I would think are a military threat. He doesn't see them as a military threat, and more importantly, he doesn't even see them as possibly becoming a military threat anytime in the near future, even with nuclear weapons. And with the news that we're getting all the time about their development of nuclear technology, and you get these stupid headlines like, well, they're thinking of releasing information that they have about Iran's development of nuclear technology, but they don't know if they're going to release the information because of politics. It makes me nervous. So this idea that you can just blithely say that Iran is not a military threat and we don't need to worry about it, that worries me. So that's been my biggest qualm with him, other than the fact that he just doesn't seem very strong in personality, not somebody who's going to command a lot of respect or attention. This week, he really seemed to shoot himself in the foot. So he was on Fox, right, Bosch? He was talking to Brett Baer and a few other commentators there. He also had Krauthammer, right, as an adversary?
Who's good and bad.
Right.
An elitist snob sometimes, but...
So the way I would summarize it, there was a lot of things that Gary Johnson said that came out of his mouth, but the biggest thing is that he showed himself as contradicting his previously stated standard of not using military force unless some country was shown to be a military threat to the United States. That was his threshold, that you had to reach the status of military threat before a Johnson administration would do anything about it. And President Obama has sent 100 troops, I guess, into Uganda. And,
which means probably 400. But
yeah, it could mean more. Who knows how much of the truth we ever get.
100 sounds palatable to some people.
I mean, these are 100 people.
Yes, 100
lives, 100 members of families and fathers and sons.
For what?
Anyway, so he sends these 100.
And Johnson's fine with it.
Yeah, the question to Gary Johnson is whether he would do this. And it was weird. His answer, he seemed to be hiding behind this technicality, which was, well, if I had signed such and such, then yes, I would. Yeah. But, I mean...
Also about Libya, he said he didn't want to engage because they weren't a military threat. And then he sanctions this.
Right.
It's like, God is a military threat? What are you talking about?
Yeah, there was two different things that he seemed to be hanging his hat on. One was this, well, if I had signed something into law, then I would send these people. Like, it's just following the procedure, and I'm having integrity because if I signed it, I'd better do it or something, which is weird. But then the reason that he actually cited was this humanitarian reason that they're engaged in genocide over there in Uganda, and so that it's necessary for that reason. But he has in the past rejected, for instance, in Libya, you did have Gaddafi going after his people and engaging in genocide. And there has been shooting on protesters in Iran, for instance, right? So, there was the very graphic image that has been passed around the internet of the brave woman protester who was killed by the Iranian security forces. So, how he can say
the current genocide is the worst genocide? So I have to get on board. I don't know.
I don't know. Or, you know, he likes Bono, and Bono likes Uganda or so. Yeah.
Bono's been an African guy for who knows how long. But by the way, his performance on Fox News inspired my latest cartoon, Gon Johnson.
Now he's Gon Johnson. So he shot himself in the foot.
The candidate wasn't there.
By being inconsistent. And you can go watch the clip. If you Google, you'll probably find it. It's Johnson talking.
You'll squirm.
Yeah, and you squirm. Yeah, it's like cringe TV, except for that it's real. You know, most cringe TV, it's fake, so you at least try to console yourself with the fact that the thing that you're cringing about on The Office or on Modern Family or whatever, it's fiction. It didn't really happen. This actually happened, and it was really uncomfortable because when they did pin him down and say, hey, look, you're being inconsistent here because you said this wasn't a military threat, but this isn't either, so why would you send them over there? He changed the
subject.
And then he talks about, well, it's okay because I'm going to be transparent with what I do. Well, if you're inconsistent, I don't care how transparent you are. We can't depend on you or rely on you. Well, at least I'll be transparent when I waffle and change policies on you.
My thinking is this. I mean, if he can't defend his own position, how the hell can he defend the country in any serious way?
Yeah.
If there's a serious threat. I mean, it's like, I don't know. He's a nice guy, but he's weak. He's a weak candidate.
Now, does anybody here want to take up for Gary Johnson and defend him? So Robert says here, have you read the latest Objective Standard interview? He says, no way on Gary Johnson. The foreign policy is dangerous, to say the least. So that's Robert, I think, just agreeing with me. I did not read that interview, but I was on a conference call with Gary Johnson where I asked him specific questions about his foreign policy. And I think I'm really the one who kind of prodded him and narrowed him down to this military threat as the standard, and also committing to him saying he didn't think Iran was a military threat and wouldn't be for 15 to 20 years.
And then he wobbled by the next question. Didn't he wobble when the next guy asked question?
Yeah, he waffles and wobbles. Yeah, Froda says he's transparently inconsistent. Yes, that's right. No. So it's okay. He's transparently inconsistent. And it's so transparent that we already know it now before he's even elected that he's going to be inconsistent. So it's perfect. John says that Johnson needs training on how to act on TV. And he says, for example, stop moving his head around. And that might be true. I can excuse any of this stuff so long as the guy actually has consistent policies that he adheres to on these issues. And I'm not saying it's easy, but...
No, he proved that an emotional aspect will dictate his foreign policy. He's like, well, this is genocide. I don't feel good about this. I will do something about it. I say, well, how about all the others happening across the world? Come on.
Well, and that's basically what all the neocons have done forever. I guess he's differentiated himself. And when they did ask him that question, that little, you know, kind of softball question towards the end of him differentiating himself from a Ron Paul, he didn't state the answer coherently, but what he seemed to be getting at was that he has these humanitarian impulses in foreign policy that Ron Paul doesn't have. But that, to me, is not an asset at all. I don't want Gary Johnson to vary from Ron Paul with respect to humanitarian missions. I want a candidate to depart from Ron Paul with respect to the willingness to engage in preemptive strikes if necessary to defend the United States, and also to depart from him on the issue of blaming United States for 9/11 or various other attacks on our interests and on our allies. You know, you just don't blame the fact that we have, for instance, invested in foreign oil production. You don't blame, you know, violent attacks on us on the fact that that has happened in the past. You know, they nationalized the oil, so they started it, so to speak.
He has a passionate fan base. I don't see it personally. I've never seen him express anything passionately, anything strong. Whenever he had a hit opportunity, he blows it, you know, in the debates, whether in interviews. It's like, okay. I mean, he's done. Yeah. And he just killed himself with that bad performance. He really did.
Now, Chris here asks, is it possible to be a consistent advocate of freedom-based politics in the system today? Could it sell? He says, I still don't think Gary Johnson would put any energy into these things that you are worried about. He might not. And if the answer really is that a consistent advocate of freedom-based policies can't sell today, it seems that you could educate people to get behind it, because they, for instance, there's a whole bunch of people who are behind Ron Paul, and a lot of people also think he's totally crazy. So yeah, a lot of people would think that Gary Johnson's constellation of positions with a nice little patch over his foreign policy to make his foreign policy better. I think a lot of people
if he had a presence, if he had a voice.
I mean, probably. So we're going to run, right, Bosch?
Yeah.
I think.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was almost joking the other day, but I'm not sure. I said, let's run.
Well, and we sort of thought that we at least had Kane, but now I have to talk about how Kane shot himself in the foot, and this is bad. And I have not seen a video clip. If anybody finds a video clip of Kane actually saying the original statement that I'm going to talk about here, please let me know. Send me a link, because I haven't been able to find a clip. I just saw the article a little while ago before the show, and I was horrified. The headline, this is a New York Times blog called The Caucus, and it was just from today, midday today. It says, Kane says his deadly fence plan was a joke. Now, apparently there were two different campaign rallies in Tennessee on Saturday night, and Kane said that part of his immigration policy would be to build an electrified fence on the country's border with Mexico that could kill people trying to enter the country illegally. And then it says in the blog here, it says, but by Sunday morning, in a dramatic change of tone, Mr. Kane, a former restaurant executive, New York Times has got to stick that in there because he's not a politician, he's just a restaurant executive, said he was only kidding. So it says, that's a joke, Mr. Kane told the journalist David Gregory during an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press, where he was asked about the electrified fence. He says, that's not a serious plan. I've also said America needs to get a sense of humor, end quote. Now, I have, debates with Bosch many times. There are things that he sees as, within the bounds of something that he thinks is funny and wants to put out there. And I tend to be a lot more conservative and restrained and boring and, right, Bosch? Yeah?
I wouldn't say boring.
Well, okay, more boring. Would you, Bosch, ever say this as a joke?
Never. I couldn't. It's a serious thing, and you're talking about killing people.
Yeah.
Killing people, and people, and supposedly the crowd loved it. It's like, what?
Yeah, yeah. I want to see the videos. I want to watch how he
played it up and said, if he did make a joke about it, still, it's off.
It's a bad joke.
To say the least.
And then it says, okay, so he was trying to pass off these incendiary comments as nothing but a joke. He says it's going to take more effort this time. He says, in making the initial remarks about the electrified fence killing illegal immigrants, Mr. Kane was detailed and repetitive. Says he did not introduce his thoughts as anything but serious commentary, beginning with the words, "We have a crisis of illegal immigration." So it's not like he introduced it in a context where you would see what he was saying was going to be a joke. And then he says, this blogger on the New York Times caucus blog says, the crowds responded with cheers, not laughs.
Now, this is the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
We do got to keep that in mind.
No, I know.
But I'd like to hear
it. I know. I mean, they would like to knock him out. Now, the other thing that this blog post dings him on is that Kane apparently didn't understand the difference between a regular conservative and a neoconservative. And I don't pretend to understand the neoconservative movement entirely, but I have a working knowledge of
the liberal conservative movement.
Right, right.
And democratizing the Middle East and all that.
Yeah, in particular, I understand the essence of neoconservative foreign policy. And I do think that someone like Kane should at least understand some of the highlights of neoconservatism before he runs for president and be able to talk about that. And apparently he was caught on that in the last day as well. So I don't know. I was really shocked, and Kane has gone down a huge notch in my mind suppose if you have a conversation with him, he will now agree that that's a terrible kind of policy even to joke about, but that was his instinct. I mean, he's not a young guy. He's not a young guy at all. And
no, he's not. He's not a young punk.
So
if he's talking about terrorists, you could almost get him passed, because terrorists, I mean, I don't give a damn what happens to them. these are people trying to get into the country. So, not all scum of the earth would need to be killed. I mean,
yeah. So my question here is, if anyone is on the call here, and
if anyone found it funny, or I don't know, if you think you're okay with it,
if you think he could have been doing it as a joke, or I mean, does this change your opinion of Kane? If you were a Kane supporter, are you changing your mind now? Okay, now it looks like Paul is sending me the link, so I'm going to go ahead and send the link out to everybody. So if you are on the call, you're going to get the link. I'll go ahead and post this link on the blog post where I put the recording.
Maybe
later.
Let us know.
Unfortunately, I don't have the facilities to watch it or share it while we're here on the call, but we'll go ahead and watch it. If you want to take a couple minutes away and take one for the team and watch it and let us know your impressions, whether you thought he was actually joking or not. Because, I mean, that's one question. Did you think he was joking? Okay, if he is joking, I don't know that it makes it much better.
No, it's almost worse. It's a bad, rotten joke. First of all, you're joking about something killing people, trying to get into the country. I mean, not all of them are the scum of the earth again.
Yeah, Robert says here, we have immoral immigration laws. Let the free market rule. Keep the ones who are legitimate threats, like terrorists, and the ones carrying infectious diseases or criminals. Yeah, keep them out. And that's what Robert says. I agree. Lucas says, not so funny. I agree. It's not funny. Paul gave us the link. Now, Obama made comments about a moat with alligators, and his comment might have been a satire related to that. That's true, but I wouldn't even joke about electrified fence because, yes, I want to keep illegal immigrants out. I want people to have to go through the proper sort of screening process that would be done under a proper government, which is just to make sure, you know, they're not terrorist criminals, not carrying diseases. That's fine, but they have to go through that process. I don't want them breaking in, so I would have some sort of physical barriers and restraints. We would capture them, but I certainly wouldn't want them to, you know, get killed during it. Now, Froda says, he says, when mainstream politicians in our culture joke about murdering people who have not violated anyone's rights, that is a much deeper issue than the suitability of individual candidates. Yeah, I mean, what kind of culture are we in where people could joke about this or seriously even put it out there as a hypothesis? I was really hit with when I heard this from him, because there are a number of things where you think, okay, well, he just wasn't so well versed on that particular political topic, and I still thought that he had the right instincts or his heart was in the right place, however you want to put it, when he doesn't have a good, consistent, explicit philosophy. But here, I mean, to even joke about it or to put it out there and say it, he's not thinking. And obviously,
and the crowd, it was a crowd pleaser, and who the hell is that crowd?
It's who's the crowd too cheering this? I mean, it sounds like that horrible experiment that they've done in psychology where, you know, people always wonder how could, you know, Hitler have gotten all those guards in Nazi Germany to be horrible to the Jews and stuff, and then they did some experiment where there were some, you know, people who are told by researchers, you know, go ahead and push this button to cause the person pain, you know, that some college students or something, and the college students do it. It's horrible to think of this and what sort of ideas in their mind and willingness to kind of go along with the crowd, and how much do you see immigrants as being your
enemies,
you know? True, you know, part of the reason we see them as enemies, immigrants, is because we've been doling out welfare programs to them, but that doesn't mean that you kill them. It means you stop holding out the promise of welfare programs to immigrants. You take away the magnet, as they say it.
If it was a joke, it's a terrible joke.
It's terrible. I have no idea how he can recover from that. I mean, it's just, you know, no matter what you think about it, it's either lack of thinking or sensitivity for human beings entirely.
I would say something about him, you know?
Yeah, or a terrible sense of humor. Now, Lucas says, the funny thing is that when I heard Kane say, I'm not good at being politically correct, I thought it was a good thing. Well, it's fine if he's not politically correct, but you still have to have policies or...
That's the point.
Yeah, the instinct of always preserving human rights. Yeah. It's not.
I think that was the point.
We all thought it was a good thing. We definitely did.
You have two hands raised. I'm not sure about one of them.
Excellent.
The name.
Yeah, we've got Alex is a first time caller to the show. Hi, Alex. Did you have a view on Kane you want to talk about?
No, sorry, I raised my hand on accident.
Oh, okay, no problem. So were you a Kane supporter before? Let me just ask you quickly, were you?
Actually, the first time I really heard about Kane too much was last week on your program when you started talking about him.
So see, I got you all excited, and then suddenly this week he's a horrible failure. It's all my fault.
That's not the end-all be-all for him. I mean, if he was joking, it's a stupid joke, and he has to make it clear.
Yeah. It almost seems like a policy guidance thing that he maybe had said the claim initially to kind of see what the audience or the public would think of it. Yeah. And it almost seems like a lashback that there was a lot of sort of negative things about it.
But it just seems that any advisor who would talk to him would steer him away from something as terrible as that.
Yeah. He probably winged it.
So, okay, so Alex, yeah, I take it back. I'm so sorry for steering you down the pro-Kane route, and glad for that you're a sport and actually talked to me after that, so that's good.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Now, who else?
On a personal level, he just comes off as better than the other guys. I mean, he comes off a little more honest, a little more, you know, in the real world, but he's just stupid.
So, Deborah, are you shocked?
Yeah, you know, that is disturbing, and I was struck by your comment about it, or I think it might have been someone else typing in it. I'm not sure, but the comment about it being a reflection on our society, like that the crowd cheered and that, mm-hmm. that statement was sort of found acceptable. And you know what it made me think of was Starnesville, like the account in Atlas Shrugged about how the people all grew to resent and hate each other because of the fact that they're all being, you know, sort of deprived of their own rewards for their work on behalf of other people's needs. And I think that there is a lot of that kind of resentment towards illegal immigrants, not that it justifies it, but just because of the fact that people see that they're coming in and getting welfare benefits that they have to pay and committing crimes, you know, like not all of them, of course, but some of them will join right. gangs. And there was a guy in San Francisco, like his whole family was gunned down by a MS-13 gang member who was an illegal immigrant. And I think that's kind of what's beneath a lot of this just really nasty resentment that a lot of people, different groups of people have for different groups of people.
Right.
It's really upsetting. I was recently rereading The Ominous Parallels, you know, by Leonard Peikoff, and I remember I read that there was a similar type of phenomenon in the Weimar Republic,
right.
that there were just these groups that just had burning hatred for each other because of welfare state policies, you know, and of this pressure group warfare phenomenon. So, I think that it's a symptom of that. I think it's really unfortunate that Kane made that comment because he had become my favorite candidate. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it was just a really stupid thing for him to say. And I guess I'd have to hear the context because he might have been sort of satirizing what Obama had said.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just jump to a conclusion that he's no good because I just, I don't know.
New York Times was behind the story, so.
Yeah. And the New York Times would like to see Romney be the nominee because I think the New York Times knows that you've got your two socialists and you've got one of them that's a better socialist, so let's go ahead and vote for him, Obama. I don't know. I'd like to see how he reacts to this. I do want to see this video, the link to which Paul posted, and we'll all check it out and see. But if I was going to do satire, I would stick with the alligators in the moat. You know, that everyone knows clearly that that's not serious. But when you do talk about electrified fence, I mean, this is something that people do put up in certain places and certain times. Now, true, I mean, you could put up, you know, a sign with all these big warnings in English and Spanish or, you know, whatever to try to say, okay, look, there is this fence. But it's still going to be the case that some people are going to come with their kids. Some little kid doesn't know how to read or whatever. He runs away from his parent for half a second and he goes up and touches the fence. And he gets electrocuted and dies. I mean, this is terrible.
Yeah, that's not okay. I mean, that's certainly not a policy I would advocate. And I just don't know what to think. His sense of life isn't dark and malicious, you know? I mean, he's kind of got a sunny personality. He doesn't seem like the kind of person who would say something like that and mean it. And I just, maybe it was just like a really weird lapse of judgment or I don't know. It's not good, though.
Yeah. Now, Froda says, I think it's because of this crowd reaction, that point that we were talking about. He says, this is why I posted on Facebook about how people get the leaders they deserve. Yeah, I guess if we voted that in, and then he went ahead and actually did it. And then Lucas says, I'm always really shocked by how viciously Republicans oppose illegal immigration. Yeah, so, I mean, definitely so am I. Now, any more, Deborah, before I go on? I'm going to talk a little bit about Peter Schiff's comments on Keynes 999.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, thanks. I don't know, this all becomes academic now, but Peter Schiff on his vlog today did, you know, say that there were some good things about Keynes 999 plan. He didn't talk about the aspect of allowing a consumption tax, a national sales tax, in as an additional revenue stream, and that was dangerous because what might happen with future administrations is that you would have not just 999, but you go ahead and let the income tax level creep up a little bit, or even, you know, maybe let the sales tax component of it or any of them go out of control. And then, you know, whereas previously we didn't have a national sales tax, now we've got all the same tax burdens as before, in essence, plus this additional consumption tax. But in general, Schiff was just talking about, if you look at the premise of only having it at 9% all the way across and truly making a shift from a income-based tax to a consumption-based tax, that this would, in general, encourage savings, which would produce loans for investment or investment in business, and so that it would help to grow the economy. So he was, you know, talking about the economic policy behind it. What he did say, though, that there is a sort of hidden fourth 9% tax in there, a hidden 9% payroll tax. And supposedly, this was supposed to replace the payroll tax. But the way that Schiff explained it was that because payrolls are not deductible expenses for corporations under Keynes' plan, that in effect, they were having to pay also 9% of what they were paying to the employee, and so that somehow that is, it's still in effect taken out of the employee's compensation, even though the tax is paid by the employer, not by the employee. So it's a hidden additional 9% tax. And he says then for some people, your taxes, your effective tax rate would actually go up and increase. But to me, the fact that Schiff is, you know, with some qualifications, maybe behind the 999 plan, is all academic, because it's just insanely sad, you know, to hear that comment. And I, like I said, I want to hear how Kane tries to spin out of it. What is he going to say?
Even with that, I still like him better than the other punks. I do.
But much less. I mean, it's almost like, yeah, I'm going to have to hold my nose more. You know, I was really going to have to hold my nose with Romney.
If he has if he has the sense to hire Schiff as a consultant, as an advisor, in some capacity,
yeah,
that would be interesting. You know,
maybe hire Bolton to help him be rational about immigration too, please.
That's right. Enough of this.
So we get to now talk about Occupy Wall Street, and I have
the loiterers party.
Yeah, the loiterers party. That's the new word that Bosch came up for them today. Instead of the Tea Party, it's the loiterers party. I mean, if you think about the fact that they want to even compare themselves to the Tea Party, and you think of a movement like the Tea Party that is based on this great event that has almost become this, you know, kind of fabled myth in American historical lore of having the Boston Tea Party and standing up on principle against the overbearing government, right? That's what the Tea Party stands for. And then this is called Occupy Wall Street. It's like we're occupying, we're just sitting there, we're just like taking space up, right?
Right. The space occupiers. There's also a great cartoon, if you don't mind. I don't know the artist. I don't know. I'm sorry. But there's a Tea Party guy with a sign, "Don't tread on me." And then there's Occupy Wall Street, "Tread on him," with the arrow pointed towards the Tea Party guy.
Right.
Tread on him.
Right.
It's just a great way of putting it.
Now, does anybody want to share with me the most horrible thing they've heard that the Occupy Wall Street people have done this week? The thing that I heard is that they actually went into Times Square on a Saturday night last night with the result that at least one woman ended up having to go to the emergency room. not that Occupy Wall Street is going to be at all fazed by this, because I've heard a couple of commentators, again, I've really tried to ignore a lot of this, because once you realize that they are just this inchoate, they have this hatred for capitalism and nothing else really about them. You know, Ayn Rand Institute had some good commentary on Occupy Wall Street this week, and I thought they really, took care of it pretty well. Scott Hollerman also had some things to say about it. But, you know, once they're just out there, like, pooping on police cars, I mean, they were literally doing that. It's horrible. It's like, I want to have as little contact with news about them as possible, and I don't take them seriously as a movement. I've heard some of them are paid off. It's all, I hope, going to come out that it's not a serious movement that's going to have any influence. It's just...
So the latest is that Obama offers more support for the occupiers, and he embraces the term, the 99%. And that just, it leads you to believe more that him and his gang were somewhat...
I mean, they're saying that there were adverts on Craigslist saying that you can be paid to go out there and occupy Zuccotti Park or whatever. Yeah. The thing that is just so sad is between hearing about the Occupy Wall Street people and their defecating and urinating on public things and property and stuff... And something that happened when I was in New York recently, which was we came out of a very nice hotel where there was a very nice event at about 11 o'clock to midnight, something like that. We came out. Two guys, they had just been drinking at this very expensive bar in this very nice hotel. We walk out. These two guys are urinating on a car that's parked on a street in New York City.
These guys are in their 40s and 50s.
Unapologetic. I think they're 40s. But, I mean, they're certainly old enough, you know, they're not young kids. Just no regard at all.
I just hope it was their car. I mean, I mentioned before.
Yeah, so that had happened just several weeks ago. And then I heard recently that some kids urinated in a theater in New York City.
Deborah says here they also urinated on a city hall, I guess one of the areas around city hall this week as well.
I mean, just no respect. So today, I'm driving down the street, and I'm on my way to go get some breakfast, and I see this guy, and what I finally see is he's just holding a hose, and he's just watering some grass. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this guy's urinating. I feel like everywhere I go, I'm in danger of watching somebody publicly urinating or defecating, because this is what the world has come to. And it's terrible that I should even have to think of this. I just want no exposure. But, you know, Schiff had, in part of his vlog, he was talking about the Occupy Wall Street people, so I was going to at least say a little bit about what he said. But first, Froda says, I see urinating people, which I'm not getting that because I'm slow, I guess. Anybody else hear of any horrible things that they've done this
week? I see dead people. That's the line. I see urinating people. That's pretty funny. That wasn't a movie.
Right, yes. Movement who act like this have nothing on their side, and it's true.
No, they have bowel movement.
Yeah. Well, and that's the sad thing. So when I keep talking about this movement, that's what came to my mind, because the stupid guy pooping on the
place. I have the graphic also with the occupied. It's like, you know, bathrooms occupied with a toilet.
Yeah, you've got the toilet paper.
Occupied.
So anybody else have any other big examples? I think some of them have said, you know, F the USA or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have. Jews this, Jews that. They're anti-Semites, a number
of them. Right. You were telling me about that. I just horrible conduct.
I mean, what
horrible.
They are.
And then what Bloomberg, what he wanted to clear out the park and clean it, but then they wouldn't let him, and so he didn't. I don't know.
He is...
And some of them have, or at least some commentators about it, have spoken as if it essentially has to, it necessarily has to come to some sort of violent confrontation in order for, you know, whatever the fates are that dictate such things, so that the whole thing can, you know, go its course. It's going to have some sort of violent outcome. So maybe they're happy, you know, the fact that some woman ended up in the ER is part of the sign. You know, it's just part of the necessary cost of having this cathartic movement that, you know, is going to change the world. And the fact that Obama is embracing this at all, if he's, you know, adopting this lingo of the 99%, it just shows.
By the way, I think someone has occupied the show. They're asking a question. Where are you guys getting all this negative press for Occupy Wall Street? Everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere, if you look.
So in terms of the woman who ended up in the ER, she is a friend of someone I follow on Twitter who lives in New York City and was reporting about it.
Hold on one second. Someone says that I haven't heard anything about people defecating. Come on.
There's a video out there of
an American flag and people cheering it on.
There was the American flag too. I forgot about that. That's right. I didn't watch the video obviously because I can't stand I saw someone passing around the video and there's a little snapshot of a guy pooping on a police car as part of Occupy Wall Street, and that I just thought that was super super classic. Oh, he pooped on it while the flag was burning, adds Tom. So that's always exciting. So
you want to put it out, right?
Yeah. Was this woman a bystander, asks Alex. As I understand, they went into Times Square, and Times Square is already super crowded and hard to navigate on a Saturday night. So I could imagine that if they were there just kind of occupying space, that it would create some fairly
big problems. And also, were these poopers condemned, by occupy poopers? I mean, were they condemned?
Poopers.
They weren't condemned. They don't give a damn.
No, I know. So in terms of what Schiff says, he says, look, they're protesting the wrong thing. And of course, Kane, earlier in the week when he was making a good speech, said the same thing. He says they're going after Wall Street. They should be going after 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Schiff said the same thing. He says the thing that they're protesting is crony capitalism, in essence, the bailouts of the banks and the corporations. But he says bailouts aren't capitalism. They think that they're anti-capitalist.
But he's being kind. They're protesting reality first, and then capitalism and anything has anything to do with doing anything well.
So you're gonna argue that Schiff doesn't go deep enough, right?
Oh no, but he never does. He's very good, but when he argues, when he had a talk with Yaron, he wasn't willing to go to a point where Yaron was willing to go against Obama. He's very good, but he's not willing to go there in certain places.
Well, he says, however good he is, America right now is giving capitalism a bad name. He says, because all of these problems are being blamed on capitalism, but they have nothing to do with capitalism. And he says, in effect, what these people, they're demanding more government, more social welfare programs, but actually what they're protesting is, the stuff that they're protesting are products of government and social welfare programs. And he says, for example, these student loans, right? If you just take a look at the student loan program, the Occupy Wall Street people have called for the student loans to be forgiven by the banks. And part of it is because these loans are so high. Why? Because college tuitions are so high. Well, why are college tuitions so high? Because we have government-guaranteed student loans, and we have had for decades. And this has created, like so many other government interference in the market has, this has created market distortions. And colleges and universities have found that they can raise tuition because students are able to easily borrow this money because of the government subsidized or government guaranteed loan programs. So if you had gotten the government out of the market, what would the colleges have to do? I mean, probably fewer colleges would exist. That would be the hard truth of it. A lot of them would have to close down. But the ones that remain, they would have to charge lower tuitions to remain competitive because nobody would be able to afford college otherwise. He has this hopeful idea that they would merge with the Tea Party, but it is true that Schiff, he is all focused on economics and economic policy. Is this capitalism? Is this not capitalism? He doesn't have that deeper focus. So I don't know if many of
you can't. Those people hate the Tea Party, the Occupiers. They hate them.
Yeah, and it's,
they're envious of them actually, also because the Tea Party is something that exists, that is real, that is legitimate, that is truly grassroots.
Well, and so maybe the other thing that they're demanding is that they're demanding the respect and the legitimacy, whatever it has,
of the
Tea Party. Yeah, without having to do anything for it. So it's like just another demand that they have.
Just cry.
Yeah. So some of you guys might know about and follow something that I do called the Ayn Rand bot. I actually created this little tweeting bot. It's a little, it automatically sends out tweets on Twitter, and it sends out quotes from Ayn Rand, and I've got a database of probably about 400 quotes by now, and they're sent out randomly, and sometimes they're sent out spontaneously by me as I read and I collect more quotes. So I've been reading The Letters of Ayn Rand, which is an excellent book and resource on all sorts of topics, one of which actually was the criteria for selecting quotations. Not for Twitter, obviously, because she didn't know about Twitter, but for a pamphlet that was at the time. So she has these three criteria for selecting quotations. So I've actually put those on an Ayn Rand bot page on Facebook if you want to go look at that. But there was something in here in one of the letters that reminded me of Occupy Wall Street and also the problems that we have, you know, with these candidates and someone like Romney who goes around and says he's for free enterprise, right? This is on page 260 of the letters book, and it's to someone named Leonard Reed, who was putting together something called the Foundation for Economic Education, which, as I understand, still exists, and I think that Yaron Brook is going to lecture for them. So in this letter, in part, she says to Leonard Reed, she says, "Is there anything more offensive and preposterous than to tell an unemployed worker that the millionaire who is throwing a champagne party on his yacht is doing so only for his, the worker's, benefit and for the common good of society? Can you really blame the worker if he then goes out and demands that the yacht be confiscated? Is it economic ignorance that makes him do so?" She continues, she says, "The more propaganda our conservatives spread for capitalist economics, while at the same time preaching collectivism morally and philosophically, the more nails they'll drive into capitalism's coffin," end quote. So you can see why this quote resonated with me this week in particular, because we've got Occupy Wall Street out there demanding that the yacht and everything else be confiscated. And at the same time, we still have even better people like Peter Schiff focusing on the aspects of capitalism or economic policy that are going to be the, quote, best for society or create the greatest good for the greatest number or however you want to put it this week. And certainly you've got our Republican candidates, at least the so-called two front runners, as they say, Perry and Romney, often competing as to who can have a bigger heart. You know, Perry says you can't have a heart and not subsidize the education of illegal immigrants. And, you know, then Perry says it's always been at the heart of the GOP to help those in need. And, you know, he's going to save Social Security. How long can we survive? And it's not a surprise that Occupy Wall Street exists and that their demands are, you know, very, very, you know, here, real, insistent, that they think they deserve this. They've been told they deserve this. They've been told that capitalism works when it serves the greatest good for the greatest number, all of them. They've been told that everything that we've been doing is capitalistic, and it's not. There needs to be moral education, and yeah, that is. That's why we have to support ARI. We might not be voting for anybody. We might be either voting with our feet, supporting ARI, voting for gridlock. Who knows? Now, Robert said he wanted to talk about the Tea Party as such, and he wants to mention something that he experienced. So I think we will go into the topic of the Tea Party unless anybody has anything.
I just want to mention something quick about that.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times and the New York New York Times Magazine, Rush brought her up on his show the other day, Rush Limbaugh, mm-hmm. and about basically it's. I think he termed it that it's a declaration of war against the Tea Party, which it is, and I basically see it as it's like a group therapy session between the New York Times and the GOP against the Tea Party, because the Tea Party exists. It is real. They can't wish it away anymore, even though someone would truly, truly like to. And that's what comes off here.
Yeah, you're talking about this article. Does anyone have a grip?
Does anyone have a grip,
right?
On the GOP? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
we did have one comment from Pooja, who probably wanted to say something quick on the Occupy Wall Street thing. One second, Pooja.
Hi, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to point out something positive about Herman Cain. He had an article in the nypost.com. this week,
mm-hmm.
and he titled it "A Look in the Mirror," And there's a sentence there which, you know, it's so much Herman Cain, and one of the reasons why I've started to like him, although I'm very suspicious of him yet. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to read that quote.
Okay.
He's saying in the article, "So to those asking for a handout on Wall Street, my message is this. If you're not rich, don't blame the rich. Get out there and work for it. You have to earn it." You know, so it's that kind of language that I kind of like.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've liked it as well, but I don't know that any amount of that language is going to make me happy right now until I see, I want to see him make the statement that they've talked about in that blog piece, and I want to see him address it and try to explain what in the world he's thinking when he says stuff like that. So we'll have to see how this plays out. It's still early. I don't have a ballot in front of me right now. I'm not being asked to vote this second, so that's good. So, yeah, so let's get to this article, Bosch. Does anyone have a grip on the GOP? And having a grip on the GOP, the candidates for having a grip on the GOP would be either the Tea Party or the establishment, right, Bosch?
Well, the Tea Party is, you know, they're a reproach to these hacks in Washington, and they don't like that. They don't like being told that they're big elitist government hacks, which they are. And you know what? But it's tough for the Tea Party because they're trying to keep dishonest people honest, and they're resisting it big time. And you know, but one thing about this hit piece is a 16-page piece. No one writes a 16-page piece unless they really want to take on something that is a serious threat to them. And but the also telling thing is that there's not one Tea Party member interviewed in this piece. They interview all of the Tea Party critics in all their various ways. There are some who feign to be fans of the Tea Party, but they don't want all their battles to be won and whatnot. And it's really pathetic. But it's just a double team against the Tea Party by the left and by the GOP.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Times is representing the left and the way that they put together this piece, but it's portrayed as, in effect, the establishment GOP being upset that the Tea Party is having all of this tremendous influence. And
also pressuring them to do things that they don't want to do.
Right,
they want to
right.
Spend.
Yeah, and well, and also they're all concerned because they are afraid that the Tea Party is going to push them into positions where they're not going to get elected, right? Because they're all concerned, you know, we've got to get somebody elected in 2012. That's the biggest thing. And,
and you know what?
They were concerned because during the debt ceiling, you know, debates or fiasco, as it's often called, the House Republicans nearly immolated themselves, as it says here in the piece. That's the way they described it. And they were worried that a lot of the Republican primary voters and independent general election voters won't support the Republican candidate because it looks like the Republicans are going to be in the grip of, quote, an infantile form of conservatism, namely the Tea Party philosophy. So what were you going to say, Bob?
Basically, I think they're also getting prepared for next year because it's Tea Party. They're still alive and well. They will run roughshod over a lot of average conservative GOP candidates. They will.
Yeah.
People are getting sick and tired, especially right now. I mean, they're trying also to wish them away. It's not going to happen. It's not happening. And there's also these a constant refrain of compromise from the New York Times, from the GOP, to try to really calm them down. And one guy says something.
Yeah, you know, in order to have any effect, you have to compromise. It's just well known among politicians that's the thing. And
there's also a noteworthy thing, but one of the hacks says, basically I asked these guys, so how are you enjoying it? And they say, oh, geez, none of them say, oh, geez, I'm really loving this. They all say some version of, this is not what I want to be doing, but I've got to do it for the country.
Yeah, you're talking about the freshman GOP people.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this guy said,
you've got a more establishment politician.
You got to live it up here.
Yeah, saying, you know, once you're in this exclusive club, which is being a legislator at the federal level, then it's like a party. You know, you're supposed to just take the benefits and everything. And it turns out that, no, some of these people are actually sincere and that they're there to do a certain job and they're not corruptible. They can't be
they can't believe that.
Into compromise.
They're like, wait, these are what we ought to be. This is what, you know, and also it's a reminder of their early ideals, I guess, these guys who went to Washington. They sold out.
They
every
sold
single
out.
Last one of them.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, man, this is a constant reminder here and now. Whoa.
Yeah.
And also, again, they are bracing themselves for next election day because they're going to get rocked.
Well, and the question is, are they going to get rocked? And we don't know. You know, there's all these different scenarios that this article paints out, which is, suppose you've got a Romney as the nominee. What's going to happen?
There'll be a backlash. There'll be a backlash against that.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people might go ahead and jump ship and vote for a so-called third-party candidate.
Robert wants to speak.
Yeah, Robert wants to talk a little bit about his experience with the Tea Party. I mean, the big question is with this article, is the Tea Party just some sort of passing phase? Is it something that the GOP is going to be able to co-opt and bring under its wing and keep under control? And the tone of the article is that they
haven't been able to.
Well, they haven't been able to, but they seem to be optimistic that they're going to be able to, and they are certainly out in the open about the fact that they are going
would know because they've been flipped.
Well, right, but they would know. But they also think it's the best thing to do because they think that there's some good stuff in there, and we want
because
it.
The status quo is good.
Yeah. Well, right. There's some good stuff in there. We want it to have an effect, and if it's going to have an effect, they have to learn how to play the game and compromise. And that's really the tone of this whole article. Yeah. So let me go ahead and get to Robert because I want to hear what he's got to say about the Tea Party. Can I brag for one second, Robert?
Sure.
Okay. So I kind of notified everybody about my thoughts on the Tea Party on February 20th of 2009. I have a post out there on there's Solo Passion blog, which I blogged. I put a post there maybe a couple times, and this is this hugely popular post there. And I speculated that Rick Santelli of CNBC was perhaps having a real effect, that he was starting what was going to amount to a real significant movement in the country. At that point in time, there was a poll that CNBC put on their website. Over 200,000 people had responded to the poll. The question was, would you join Rick Santelli's Chicago Tea Party? And 94% affirmative answers to that poll. So the question now is, has it lost steam? Is it just going to be folded in and be part of the Republicans? So what did you learn the other day that about that?
Well, the first thing was I really did think it was losing steam because there's a Bronx Tea Party club that Andy and Arshak Benlian from New York Objectivist Society both visited, and they're just flat out conservative.
Okay.
They don't like immigrants. They have their prayers. They're pretty much against objectivism as well. So yesterday there was this event called Teed Up for 2012, mm-hmm. and 9 tea parties in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, organized it. And we asked if we could have a booth there. We asked if we could have Andy Bernstein speak. And they allowed us to have a booth, and they even published Andy's book in the flyer that they handed out to everyone. They mentioned that we would be there selling his new book, Capitalist Solutions, mm-hmm. but they specifically didn't want him to speak.
Wow.
There were 7 speakers lined up, and they didn't want him to speak. Maybe, you know, they thought we were crackpots or something. But as it turned out, and then when I got the program, the first thing I see was that there's going to be a presidential prayer.
Of course.
So we went in there just not expecting very much. Now, the prayer was actually a direct quote from Jefferson, and it was not one of his better quotes, but mm-hmm. a lot about God and a lot about praying, but at least it was Jefferson, so it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Yeah. I was going to say, if people want to appeal to Jefferson for various bad things, you can also appeal to Jefferson for various bad positions on intellectual property as well, if you're interested in that.
Right.
So they start out with a prayer, and then what?
And then 3 speakers went by. A couple of people bought Andy's book. I bought his book, and I was walking around with it, and people were coming up to me and asking about it, because the MC had mentioned Andy by name and the table and said he would not be speaking. But then, as the day wore off, the guy came over and said, well, we actually might have some time for you to speak. So it turned out that they did give Andy a chance to speak, and he got a decent ovation. There wasn't as large a crowd as we expected. They thought there'd be around over 1,000 people, and there were probably about 200. But after he spoke, 3 different Tea Party groups came up to us. More people were buying the book, and Basically, they were interested in doing like joint ventures between the New York Objectivist Society and their Tea Party group. So, what we came out of this knowing is that there, besides Andy, there was I think one other woman who was an actual author, and the rest were just run of the mill. You know, there was one table that was right-to-lifers, not too much religion, that not too much sickening stuff, I should say. Generally goodwill. Good-willed people, but I've had the feeling that it was losing its steam, and probably still is losing its steam, except for the fact that we know we made an impact there, and there, as we as objectivists know, they are looking for intellectual leadership.
They're receptive.
They're receptive to it.
They desperately need it because there's no way that they can challenge all of these policies that grow out of the traditional altruist ethics without challenging that ethics. So only an Andy Bernstein is going to tie that moral philosophy piece in for them. So that's good. I mean, I'm glad that he was able to speak and have more of an impact there. One thing that they said in the article here, I mean, this, you know, 16 pages, come on, did you have to go on that long? But one thing that they said was that there was an emphasis away from, you know, out in the streets sort of physical protests by the Tea Party, and they're more turning their efforts towards social media and kind of spreading out the message that way. We did see a big reaction to the Attack Watch, right? There was a huge spontaneous Twitter fest. You know, first it was through Twitter, and then somebody grabbed a Facebook page that was Attack Watch and went out there. So it may be that because we do have the internet and you can get your message across without having to assemble literally, right? That we might be seeing that shift, and it might not be losing steam as much. You know, I do see
changing form.
Yeah, I see the fact that Herman Cain has been doing well in the polls as an excellent sign for the strength of the Tea Party movement. So the fact that you don't necessarily see so many people at these physical events, to me, doesn't necessarily mean something bad. And I do know that various Tea Party groups in different locations have not been so receptive to objectivists being speakers there. And that's a problem with the leadership of the particular Tea Party groups. But I agree. The more that we can just get out there and talk and talk and talk. And, you know, like I said, I did my little Ayn Rand bot, and I've got, I think, over almost 1,600 followers now, and each of those people might have thousands of followers, and then little quotes of wisdom from Rand get spread all over the world, and then hopefully, you know, all these things together that we all do are going to have an effect.
What did one girl say? The one girl who didn't know about Rand, she goes, oh, that's really deep or something. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't know if that woman is still following the bot or not, but she used to. I get all these reactions back. It's pretty funny. But one of them, she was saying, oh, that's another really deep thought. Your thoughts are way too deep, you know. But you get all kinds of reactions, but I'm sure some of it is doing some good. So you just keep going. What do you think about 2012, though? I mean, are we going to have any effect in the right direction on 2012, Robert?
I really fear Romney. I'm really afraid of him. It's disgusting. But let me just tell you one thing. There were two black women speakers, and one of them was Barbara from Harlem, who had a table right next to us. And I asked her about Cain. I said, "So I guess you're happy about Cain, right?" And she said, "Well, actually, I like Perry more." So that was something again. That was a letdown from what I was expecting or hoping for.
Yeah.
I figured everyone would be bragging about Cain, but his name didn't come up. My fear was that they would be talking about Romney, but they didn't mention any politician by name, actually.
Okay.
So that, you know, that part was, you know, that was hopeful. But I feel like if Romney wins the nomination, we're sunk. We're really sunk.
Do you think with a Romney as president, it's going to at least have the effect of buying us some time, or it's really going to sink us?
I am the eternal optimist. I'm the eternal optimist, but even that's too much for me.
I mean,
that is too much for me.
Were you aware of how empty all his policies were before I read off that list?
Yes,
you were aware
I was. Yeah,
It's depressing.
Yeah,
it's really. And the fact that he characterizes it as bold and, you know, it's a stark, you know, change from Obama, it's just terrible.
High North bold, he said so.
That's right.
Yeah, right. It's odd because Ayn Rand talks about his father when he was a governor of Michigan about how...
He was against Goldwater.
Right, and democratic capitalism, he liked that idea, trying to soften capitalism because no one believes in it. So it's the same thing a generation later. I totally despise him.
Terrible.
I don't know what we're going to do. Now, Deborah says here that her group has shifted emphasis away from going on protests and waving signs, more direct political and intellectual activism. Yeah, another thing that they mentioned in the article was that sometimes Tea Party group representatives would try to meet with politicians and actually try and talk to them about changing their policies. So that could have a better effect than just going out there and waving flags in the air. Now, Chris here says the Tea Party is still a diagnosis, not a cure. We need a unifying philosophical base. Yep, and that's what we're trying to put out there. Chris also doesn't think we're going to buy some time. So I really don't know what to say. After this week, I'm really kind of demoralized because Romney's terrible.
Kind of. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah. Kind of. I'm trying not to be. So I'll go play with my dogs for a while. But Romney's terrible, and you've got Johnson and Kane shooting themselves in the foot. Kane in a way that's more disappointing to me than Johnson, I think, because Johnson had showed some signs of some...
You have one more hand raised if you want to say it quick.
...disappointing foreign policy. I don't know if I... Oh, who do we have? We have Mike, and Mike has not spoken. Hi, Mike. Real quick before we go.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I heard someone talking about the... Tea Party that was close by to them in New York, and it's really important that you engage these groups because, like, about 2.5-3 years ago, I joined, and a little bit of shame here, a Glenn Beck group, but I only did it because it was the only one that wasn't just libertarian.
Right.
And when I got in there, they were all religious, and I told them I wasn't going to stay here if it got wacky. And they respected that. They're like, no, we're just here to, you know, because we're concerned citizens. And my brother, Tom Flopel, and I both participate in it, and we've influenced it in such a way that they stay off the religious topics. They stay off the abortion topics. They hold those, you know, obviously they hold those things dear.
Right.
But because we got involved, I'm part of the leadership. I influence it. And there's over 1,000 people in this group. And they listen to me. They listen to Tom. And they respect us greatly. Objectivists need to get into these things. And they have to participate and not compromise their values. That's all. Just they will respect you for that. And if you're open and honest with it and not an asshole, you know, just constant spewing of atheism, they're going to stick with you. That's just the way these people are. And they don't want you to be a Dawkins or a Hitchens, you know, type. They want like Yarnbrough.
Ideas. They want ideas.
Yes, ideas. Well, not even ideas. They want, we have the answers. They don't. And if you consistently speak from an objectivist standpoint, there's nothing they can say. I mean, there really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because we have the consistency, whereas they don't, and they fail at that message long term. And if we stick to it, we can continue over the time to show where you're right. These people will listen to you, and they will encourage people like Andrew Bernstein to come and speak at their meetings. We'd love it to have him here. You know, we had him here at RIT 2 years ago, and, you know, it was a good experience.
Well, in the California area, I put it out there. I'm willing to go speak at any of these events if people will have me, and I'll try to be a good influence there. So that's all the time we have. Thanks very much, Mike, for sharing that. And that's at least optimistic that we can have. Yeah, and thanks, Robert, as well. Thanks, everyone, for being here and participating today. During the week, keep in touch with me at my blog, don'tletitgo.com. You can also find links there to all the other ways to keep in touch with me, the Facebook page, the link to the iTunes subscriptions. You could subscribe to the blog and get an update of posts. I need to write more things there, so I've got a standing order to write more to you guys soon. Take care, have a good night, and we'll talk next week.